This episode is brought to you by Aircraft Accessories of Oklahoma. When it's time for an aircraft component inspection, overhaul, repair, or replacement, you need experienced technicians you can trust and friendly service you can count on. Aircraft Accessories of Oklahoma, a family-owned business since 1959, delivers just that.
Our techs have real-world experience and provide sales, service, and overhaul for piston engine aircraft accessories. We also have limited turbine capabilities such as fuel pumps, starter generators, and prop governors. And we can overhaul propellers ranging from fixed pitch to turbine. Propeller pickup and delivery service is available. And one more thing, mention this podcast to receive 5% off your next sale, service, or overhaul. Visit aircraftaccessoriesofok.com.
This week on Hangar Talk, the Eagle has taken off.
And proposed new drone rules are riling aviation groups.
It's not just your imagination. The aircraft market is very hot.
The Textron Sky Courier Utility Twin Turboprop is certified.
And you may have heard Textron also acquired Pipistrel.
Ian, are you ready to do some hangar talk?
Let's do it, David.
From AOPA, your freedom to fly. This is Hangar Talk.
1056, turn right, heading 130, contact final 132.4.
Turn right, contact.
With your hosts, Ian Twombly and David Tulitz. This is Hangar Talk.
Welcome to Hangar Talk, everybody. I'm Ian Twombly.
And I'm David Tulitz.
David, our guest this week, Jessica Hernandez. She was at Latinas in Aviation, an event you went to a couple months ago. Young, successful Latina aviator, and you caught up with her.
Indeed, we did. She's a Chicago-based corporate pilot. She flies a Hawker 800, and she will tell us not only how to get other young Latinas involved in aviation, but some of her own experience being a Hispanic woman in the aviation world.
Okay, cool. So we'll have that a little later. And before we get to the news, two old dudes are going to tell you about new social technology and a way you have to check in or something. I don't know. David, help me out. What is this?
Well, I do it all the time, Ian. So, you know, we have the pilot passport, the badge functions for the AOPA pilot passport. And did you know, Ian, that you can get a Hangar Talk badge? Yes, you can. So I'm going to tell you how to get your Hangar Talk badge. It's good for 1,000 points. Folks who want to get a point boost, and you get them for landing at grass fields. You land them for helicopter locations. You get badges for Class B airports, Class Delta, et cetera, seaplane ops. You got one now for listening to Ian and I for all these long months on Hangar Talk.
All right.
You go to the affiliate code redemption page. That's under your My Points and Badges page. And type in Hangar Talk 22. Doesn't even have to be all caps. It could be lowercase. But all together, Hangar Talk 22. And you're going to be like me and get 1,000 points for your pilot passport badge.
Okay, so the only thing I can add to that is it's Hangar, H-A-N-G-A-R.
Yes.
For those of us who learned that the hard way. Yeah, H-A-N-G-A-R. All right, cool. So yeah, go ahead and do that and earn some points for, I don't know what, bragging rights, I guess?
Rights. And this is cool. The second year we've done it, Ian. So thanks to our Pilot Passport team for social media promotion and for getting their word out. And thanks to all of our Hangar Talk listeners who have stuck with us for these past 6 years.
All right, so the news. The Eagle has taken off. Eagle, you hopefully know what this is by now. This is the Eliminate Aviation Gasoline Lead Emissions Group. This is the group that AOP is an integral part of that is going to come together to get lead out of our aviation fuel. They had their first meeting just recently. David, you were there.
I was there. And so the initiative is, Ian, it has a deadline. The deadline is 2030. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at things down the road, 2030 seems like a long way off, but it is not a long way off for this kind of initiative because a lot has to come together. As you mentioned, the first meeting was held last week. As we release the podcast, it'll be about a week after the meeting. It was a two-day stakeholder meeting at the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. And more than 170 participants were brought together, led by AOPA President Mark Baker and the FAA's Earl Lawrence. Now, Earl Lawrence is a Piper Twin Comanche owner. He has his aircraft based in North Virginia, and he has a stake in the game.
Yeah, so, an aviation guy through and through. That's right.
Absolutely.
So, David, you shot a great picture here, which I think tells the entire story of the group and the gravity of the people that they've brought together and how important this is. So it's Mark in the center. We've got Earl Lawrence to his right. Well, to his left, we're looking at the right. And then on the other side is DOT's Annie Pentzonk. And so I think you mentioned George Braley was there from GAMI. We've got the Petroleum Institute. The folks from SWIFT were there. It really is everybody coming together towards this common goal.
Yeah, and that's the important part of the meeting. And there was, I will say that they covered some pretty tough subject matter, and it can get a little dense at times. Like, Ian, mm-hmm. I didn't know this, but you know, when you're talking about combustion and you're talking about the cycles of an engine, I didn't realize that when you are thinking about retarding the timing to help, you know, engines still run at the appropriate power levels, that it could go out and affect the propeller.
Yeah, that's an amazing bit from this story, right? So that brings up the PAFI process. They have, of course, tested a number of candidate fuels for now years through the Piston Aviation Fuels Initiative process, which was like this closed door stakeholder process where they kept it kind of I don't want to say anonymous, but it wasn't transparent to the public. In order to protect trade secrets, they agreed for the Petroleum Institution and all those folks from the petroleum world. So they've been testing these fuels. Nothing really has come out of it that's been successful. So Earl Lawrence says, does it replace PAFI? No. Eagle is a supplement to that. Was PAFI a failure because it didn't come up with a drop-in replacement? He says no, because they've learned so much. But getting to the point, they did find one of the things they learned was that the change in fuel, even it's changed vibration through the propeller, which can affect its life, which is just incredible.
And so the Eagle Initiative builds on that framework accomplished by the PAFI. And that was introduced back in 2013. And don't forget, AOPA has been a member of this steering committee organization for a pretty long time, you know, working behind the scenes, which is super quick. That's another reason to be an AOPA member, to help support processes like this, because aviation fuel for aviators, this affects everybody who's in general aviation at this point. So you've got your folks at AOPA being part of these committees, part of the meetings, a part of the folks steering this so that we can find a drop-in replacement that will work in every engine, basically in as many aircraft engines as possible, and provide a smooth transition. And some of the people, Ian, mentioned that, you know, during the transition, say there's a changeover to a new type of fuel. Well, what if you've got, you know, a half a tank of a certain type of fuel in your aircraft, and then you go to add another type of fuel to it? Or say you fly from the U.S. to Canada, and then there's a different type of fuel there. So the initiative is trying to bring together all of these different components and make it so that it's a safe alternative that works with everybody.
Yeah, very important. So this is obviously how these things get done, and it is getting done, which is important. So, hey, moving on, something else we got to talk about that's not necessarily exciting but really important, drone rules. A few months ago, the FAA waded into what they call an aviation rulemaking committee. This is a group of, again, stakeholders that come together and they come up with a report and advise the FAA on how to move forward. FAA doesn't have to take their advice, but they often do. So this rulemaking committee came together, has been meeting often. There's dozens of participants from everything from AOPA to drone manufacturers to Amazon and all kinds of others. They have submitted their report, and let's just say we don't really agree with it.
No, I'll say we don't agree with it at all. It's a greater concern from our perspective at AOPA. We're looking at the fact that there might be a couple of different types of airspace introduced into this already alphabet soup of airspaces. We're going basically from A to G already. And we're looking at adding a couple of other different types of airspace, very, very low altitude airspace, Ian. But I think that trying to integrate, you know, beyond visual line of sight drone operations, which will, of course, increase as you know, the economy starts to use it more and more. But we need to figure out a way to integrate that into our current operations. And I think you might have some insight as a helicopter pilot into some low altitude ops that might kind of butt heads with this low altitude, non-shielded area below 400 feet
Yeah.
idea.
Yeah, so they really what they've said is the report says that the group recommends that they have essentially new right-of-way rules based on equipage and not on maneuverability the way they are now, which of course makes perfect sense because when we're flying around, we see a blimp, we see a balloon, we know that they can't get out of our way, so we get out in an airplane, we get out of their way, right?
Right.
So the group proposed something completely different, which is basically if you have certain equipment, then you avoid or be avoided. And what it comes down to is, let's say you have maybe an antique airplane and a drone with more mounted equipment. Well, the antique airplane has to avoid the drone, which is totally
opposite.
As we know, yeah, totally opposite of the way it should be and the way that things really would happen in the real world. So AOPA made this point, said, look, there are all sorts of operations down below 400 feet. We're talking ag, a lot of helicopters, powered parachutes.
Yeah, power parachute, weight shift.
All sorts of things. So it is a real, real safety concern. From the beginning, AOPA has said if drones are going to come into the national airspace, they have to come in seamlessly and be able to see and avoid just like everybody else. So this is a real issue. And AOPA did file a statement of non-concurrence to this, as did a number of other participants.
And like I said, it's all about operating beyond the visual line of sight, BVLOS. And that's a key buzzword and a key term that a lot of folks are going to hear more about in the aviation community and in the non-aviation community as more packages get delivered. We already have seen, you know, medical supplies and things like blood being delivered from one part of a medical campus to another part, things like that. But this could increase. And, you know, like you said earlier, UPS and Amazon and Walmart, they all have plans for this type of drone operation. So
yeah.
I see conflicts. I see that there could be a conflict. Say I'm coming in for a landing. I'm going to land at a grass strip in a Piper Super Cub that does have a radio. And then someone is operating in one of the two new proposed airspaces, but they're adjacent to me and I'm coming in and I'm below 400 feet because I'm on final approach. You know, I see this as being something to look out for, whereas before, you know, I just think that you're opening this airspace to some potential safety hazards.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So something we'll keep watching. This is the beginning, really. Well, the middle of the process, let's call it. It's not the end all be all. They don't have to take the committee's recommendations, but we will continue to advocate for seamless integration. And we'll be right back. Hey, David, I got a riddle for you. How can you upgrade your next flight without upgrading your airplane?
I think upgrading the pilot would be the first clue for that one.
The guy between the headsets, huh? Yeah.
That's right.
All right. That's not what I'm talking about, but I'll give you a clue. It has ADS-B traffic and weather, Sirius XM weather and entertainment, no wires, and it works with 4Flight and Garmin Pilot.
Oh, Ian, I know what that is. It's the Garmin GDL-52 Sirius XM portable weather receiver.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And now, believe it or not, the Garmin GDL-52 comes with a 3-month trial of Sirius XM aviation weather and a very special limited time $400 rebate. Learn more about all that this receiver can do and the limited time $400 rebate by visiting sporties.com/GDL52. David, the aircraft market, we know it's on fire. You and I have talked about this, as potential aircraft owners many times. Now there is a report out that you found is a really good one from Sand Hills Aviation, which you probably haven't heard of, but Controller, which they own, you have. And they get into what's going on in the market, what's been going on the past couple of months. And it is, it's even more amazing than I think we had imagined.
I'm going to call this astounding. Yeah. Like you said, Sand Hills Equipment Value Index. Now, these are the folks behind Controller.com. And they're pretty slick, printed, you know, magazine-ish looking publication and also online. Listen, Ian, for the piston single aircraft category, they posted a 24.2% year-over-year asking value price increase. And that was as of February. That the average EVI was $237,000. That's up from $191,000 in February 2021. And this is the prices here we're talking about are based on aircraft that are between 0 and 10 years old. So these are more or less newer airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
But a 24.2% increase in 1 year is pretty amazing.
It is. And anecdotally, I mean, they talk about the asking price because that's what they're able to track. But, you know, anecdotally, we hear people are getting their asking prices, if not more. So I think we can equate that also to actual values. And of course, what drives that is the demand and supply side. So demand, we think, is up. Supply is way down. So they also
down,
said in
down
that,
by 33%. Yes, in fact, year yes. over year, supply yep. is down. As you, when you're looking to buy an airplane, like I've been kind of looking off and on, and it's amazing. As soon as people post an airplane on Facebook, for instance, Facebook Marketplace, you can click on it an hour later and it says sold.
Yeah, it's amazing, amazing stuff. So this is really good data. I will say anecdotally, I just last week talked to a broker in the twin turboprop segment. And we know the light jets have been really on fire as well. And he also sells some light jets. And he said he thinks just in the last 2 weeks, things are starting to maybe sort of normalize a little bit. He, you know, who knows why, but he thinks it coincided a bit with what's going on over in the Ukraine. So some uncertainty there. And then also inflation. He thinks maybe inflation is starting to have an impact on that. So But the key here is, and this is what they talk, you know, this is what some of the folks from VREF talked about when we talked to them a couple months ago. Even if things slow down a little, they're going towards healthy. So it's not like we're going from on fire to really terrible market with the flip of a switch. Probably what we're going to go to is on fire to hopefully a little more normalized.
So it won't be a complete bottom coming out of the market, but it might normalize a little bit. Listen, I need to clarify one thing. When I was talking about the average prices, you know, we're looking at a 24.2% year-over-year asking value price increase. That was across the whole fleet. And it went from $237,000. It was up from $191,000 in 2021. And what I meant to say was in the 0 to 10-year age group, which is just 15% of the total inventory, that saw a $49,000 increase between January of this year and February of this year. So these are newer airplanes, you know, in the $400,000 or $500,000, you know, range, but it went up. They went up $50,000 in 1 month.
Incredible, yeah. So what people are, you heard people saying, well, I'm going to wait out the market. It's like, well, you just continue to get priced out of it, I think is what's going on, at least for the short term.
So Ian, are there any values left? We talked about this before.
Oh yeah, I know. And you know, Dave Hirschman just wrote a story for Pilot about, before I said, based on some recommendations from brokers that we were talking to, that maybe the light twin market is still a pretty good bargain. And he's saying, well, even those prices
are going up.
Recovering. Yeah, I mean, it used to be you could get it for the price of the engines or less.
And the LSA market might be something to consider. You and I talked about that a couple of Hangar Talk shows ago.
Yeah.
I still think that older V-tail bonanzas might be like sort of the hidden nut in all this, you know, the hidden gem.
Yeah.
And, you know, near and dear to my heart, air coupes, they're still relatively affordable.
Hmm.
And the Mooney C and E models have not quite, you know, risen past the $190,000 mid-70s, 172 Cessnas.
Okay, so curious, what's before we go to the Sky Carrier, what's an air coupe, decent air coupe with a mid-time engine?
Yeah, about $25,000.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that's relatively affordable. This is all
up,
relative.
But not
Right, but a Cessna 150, which is also a two-place airplane that still goes about 100 miles an hour,
yeah,
those are now $40,000 or $50,000.
Wow.
And yeah, up.
I would say anything for the training market is like, forget about it.
It's tough. Even the later model Beechcraft, what was that, the Skipper? And the Piper Tomahawk, you know, those used to be hidden gems as well.
Depending on how you look at it.
Well,
right, yeah,
relatively, right. A lot of people don't want to fly them. I get it. But they used to be relative values, put it that way. And even those are jumping up there, as is like a Beechcraft. What the Musketeers used to be sort of the...
Yeah, they were good
that
values.
We forgot about them, airplanes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, Sundowners. Mm-hmm. Those are jumping up to $40,000, $50,000, wow. $60,000 as well. So,
Well, something that's not a value, but is really cool, let's say, the Sky Courier. So Cessna, about a year, even less than a year after its first flight, I just find that amazing. It is certified. The Sky Courier has been certified.
FAA's type certification earned just this month. And, you know, FedEx is on the hook to buy the first 50 of them, and they have an option for 50 more. And just to let people know, this is a really capable airplane. It's not just a cargo mover. It could be a people mover also. And you're looking at a 210 knot maximum cruise airspeed. I'm going to read a couple of figures. If you're loading pallets on there, three of those industry standard big pallets can get loaded in to that airplane. It has a nose baggage area that holds 300 pounds. That's not something that's often talked about in this airplane, because you're looking at a 6,000 pound, payload.
That's awesome.
And a 19,000 pound max takeoff weight, 72 feet of wingspan, 21 feet in height. Listen, I've been underneath the tail feathers of that thing. It's like looking up a two-story building to get to the top of that.
Wow.
But what a cool airplane.
It is really cool, I got to say. So, yeah, passengers, I love the little mock-up photo they have. I would not want to be a passenger on one of these. I mean, you're talking, it looks even smaller than a Beech 1900. I don't know if it is, but I mean, I guess for the developing world, it probably represents a new airplane that they can add to the fleet, 19 passengers. It's really nice. Two engines, obviously. I will say, for pilots, this thing is going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Because before, you had to go to the FedEx feeders, you were flying caravans, there was always that decision, like, well, do I get the turbine time, even though it's single, or do I stay and get, like, piston twin time, maybe closer to home or something? This, you don't have to worry about it. You're going to get a type rating with the weight, which is really important. You're going to get those two turbine engines. That's a big deal. And it's still, sort of intro level to fly, let's call it, skill-wise.
Well, yeah, fixed landing gear. I mean, that's the other thing. Nose wheel steering, manual brakes. There's nothing unconventional about that. Manual controls as we're used to.
Yeah.
And what's cool about this, I think this is really neat from an operator perspective, that single point pressure refueling.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of unique. And that I can see that really help with the turnarounds.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the 19 seat configuration. You could also, it's got a stand-up cabin. It's almost 6 feet tall inside, but you could also configure it for 9 passengers and like a combination floor plan.
Yeah.
So sort of a semi-corporate kind of a deal.
Yeah, or that's like your Alaska configuration, because you take passengers
cargo. Okay,
right,
yeah. Okay, yeah, good point. That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. I like that.
It's a cool airplane, super cool airplane. I think they're obviously going to have huge success with it, just like they have with the Caravan. So you can see all sorts of applications all over the world for it. So in Cessna, man, they know how to certify airplanes. Like,
well, that was
less than a year,
amazing amount
flight.
Of time. Yeah, that's cool.
And what do they say? They have almost 3,000 hours of test flights on the fleet. So,
well, Tom Horn participated in the test bed bunny, on that airplane,
mm-hmm.
with the Iron Bird, I guess is what they call it.
Yeah,
it's got some great stats on this airplane. Takeoff distance 2,700 feet. 920 or 940 nautical miles range, depending, and 25,000 feet maximum altitude, so you can get there.
Yeah, cool stuff. All right, so hey, something else that everybody's been talking about, a big deal, Textron, so not Cessna specifically, but Textron has purchased Pipistrel, we call them an electric pioneer. They do so much more. They're out of Slovenia. They make all sorts of cool moto gliders, electric airplanes, sleek four-seaters. It's now all Textron.
Well, that puts Textron in the pilot seat, if you will. I was going to say driver's seat, but I'll say pilot seat. Basically, puts them in the pilot seat in the electric market. And there's some stiff competition. We've talked about George Bai from Bai Aerospace out of Denver. They're developing two-place and four-place and larger electric aircraft. But now Textron has their own line. It's their airplanes, the Pipistrel Alpha Electra, has already been flying.
Yeah, certified in Europe. Yeah.
Proven technology.
Yeah.
So they can add that to the renowned brands of Beechcraft, Bell, of course, Cessna.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of interesting synergy, Ian. What do you think? They bought an up-and-coming company that has some really neat technology. And like that Panthera, that is a slick-looking four-passenger airplane.
Yeah. It's super cool. I totally agree. I think you should start letting go now, because it's dead.
The Panthera?
Dead. Totally dead.
But why? Is that because there's a Cessna 182 four-passenger in the Textron line that, is already there, and the Beechcraft A36s?
Yeah. I think if you look at the history of how Textron acquires these companies. So they bought Columbia. Now, that was out of bankruptcy.
Oh, that's right.
They adapted and then created the Corvallis and then TTX. That airplane was fantastic in every way. Just an incredible airplane. Flew beautifully.
Four-passenger low wing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like the Panthera.
Yeah. It was a competitor to the Cirrus and the Mooney, and I think was better than both in terms of a pilot's airplane. It was incredible. They basically bought the company for the composite knowledge and then never really used it.
Gotcha.
They had some problems with composites early. I think they tried to move into Mexico. It didn't really work. So it was a total flop. Should have been a success, total flop. You know, they created and manufactured an LSA, total flop. They just didn't have the commitment to it.
The 162 was, yeah. They crushed all those airplanes. I saw one of those for sale recently, by the
really?
Way, when I was looking. Yeah.
Oh, wow. But how much was it going for? You remember?
Well, I forgot, Ian. But the other thing is that, what about support for something like that? That's the other thing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're on your own. And which with an LSA is a problem.
Right. Now, the Panthera, I configured a Panthera for myself, Ian, as a four-person, low-wing airplane. It's got a big honking engine on it. It's IFR certified, Part 23. And it's with a parachute, because you can go online and configure it yourself with a parachute. I went ahead and got it made for $655,000. That's less than a Cirrus.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't care. They don't care about the Panthera. I think it's really telling what they're going to do with it. They're calling it an E division, an E market.
Uh-huh.
They're interested in the electric technology. I don't think they particularly care about the current platforms. They want the engineering expertise and the electric expertise.
Exactly.
I think you're looking at probably drones in the future, eVTOL. It gets them into the eVTOL world along with Bell.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. Well, with Bell having the vertical takeoff specialty, they already are a huge player in that. They can marry these two and have some real synergy there, Ian. That's a real good point.
Yeah, so they're going to call it Textron eAviation and develop sustainable aircraft. So I don't think they care about the Panthera. I don't think they care about the old motor gliders. It's like it's all about electric for them. So if they try and get the Velis Electro certified in the States, they do obviously have, as we've seen with the Sky Courier, they have the resources to get that done and the expertise. And so that would be great. And maybe they'll do that just as a sort of proof of concept. But yeah, it is. If you're a big Pipistrel fan, I think you're disappointed in this news.
Well, I configured a Pipistrel Verus two-person Alpha Electro myself. And that's $195,000. So, you know, if you're a flight school that, you know, quote unquote affordability, that kind of is, I think, affordable. And I configured the regular engine, the conventional engine model together, and that's about $198,000. So they're very comparable. But for a two-person brand new airplane, you know, that could make some sense, I think, if you're flying in the pattern. You're teaching your students how to get started. You don't have to go that far. I mean, there could be some benefits of that. Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah. All right, David. So that's, I think we've talked enough this week about the news, that we had some good topics this week. Let's hear from Jessica Hernandez. She's got a lot to say about what it means to grow up in aviation as a Latina, what some of the opportunities are as a professional pilot. It's a great interview. I'm so glad you got to talk to her.
Jessica, tell us what you do these days in aviation. What's your job?
Well, I'm a corporate pilot. I fly a Hawker 800XB out of Gary, Indiana, and I do charter flights for our company.
Now, we're here at Latinas in Aviation Day at College Park, Maryland. It's a historic airport. Tell us what brings you here.
Well, what brought me here was coming across all these amazing women and Jackie putting us all together. They asked if my friend Jasmine, at the time she was my co-worker, and they asked her if she knew another Latina pilot. There was this woman trying to write a book about Latinas in aviation. I got to meet Jackie, and then like the rest is history. We got to be in the book and just really honored to be with all those amazing women.
How did you meet Jacqueline Ruiz?
Through Jasmine. I was referred to Jackie by my DP when I got my private check ride. He suggested me to connect with Jackie, but for some reason in the life, we really didn't connect. And my DP was just very thrilled that he had just done a check ride for another Latina. Of course, it's nothing really common, so he thought that it was a good idea if we connect each other. But then later on in life, Jasmine was the one who eventually got me to meet with Jackie and be in the book.
Okay, so you mentioned that there aren't that many Latinas in aviation. It begs the question, how can we get more involved?
Representation is key. I think that what the book has as a purpose is just to show other people that look like us, that come from very similar backgrounds, that speak like us, that it's possible to achieve what we achieved in aviation and even more. When we get to a cockpit, it's really rare to see someone that looks like us, that speaks like us, especially here in the US. So it's really key that we represent those positions in which they can be eventually later on in life, and show them that there, if there is a will, there is a way.
When you got started in aviation, take me through the steps that got you into aviation. Did you come through it through normal channels like some of us, private pilot, then instrument commercial, or did you go to an aviation college or school?
I went to a Part 61 school. It was an accelerated fast track program that took me from private pilot to CFI in about 12 months. So I did that, and then I became a flight instructor. I was doing that for a little bit over a year and a half. And then after that, that's how I got my corporate aviation job.
Where did you instruct when you were CFI?
Out of the Chicago area. So I instructed out of the DuPage Airport and then the Bolingbrook Airport a little bit further south.
You got to tell us how you decided to pursue aviation.
Well, I always wanted to become a pilot. I grew up in a military family. My parents worked for the Colombian Air Force. That's the route I wanted to follow, but unfortunately, you know, life had other plans. And I kind of like had given up a little bit on that dream, and then I moved to the U.S. 7 years ago. And I saw that aviation in the U.S. is a lot different than what it is in Colombia. So here, the opportunities and the aviation industry is a lot wider and a lot more accessible to different kinds of people. So I decided, you know, that I might take up on a loan and just start my journey here, which I never thought it was going to be possible. And thankfully, I'm here today.
So the United States provided an opportunity to you that would have been more difficult in Colombia.
Yeah, it was definitely more difficult. I had taken another path in my career. I had already a bachelor in something totally non-aviation related. So I never thought this was going to be my ultimate, you know, career or what I was going to do for a living. And the U.S. definitely, you know, it's a land of opportunities, and it was the land that gave me the opportunity to become a pilot.
So a lot of us have an aviation mentor. I'm going to make a guess that you might have as well.
I have a lot of mentors, yes, and I got the opportunity to meet a lot of women that fly for the airlines, and they definitely encouraged me and provided me with some resources into where to go, how to study, what to expect, and it's just, I can't single one person. I have a lot of people that along the way have become my mentors. So everything from airline pilots to my peers to DPEs to chief pilots for other companies, they have really paved the way for getting me here today.
Tell me a little bit about flight instruction. You said you did some instruction. You operate out of Gary. Is that where you also teach when you're not working?
No.
Corporate?
No. So I'm a flight instructor, and I did that for a year and a half. I did it out of the DuPage Airport and then Bolingbrook. And it was an amazing experience. It really kept me sharp, and it made me feel that I was giving back to the aviation community. So I was, as much as I learned, I was also giving back to the aviation community. I was taking people, you know, to their first solo, or maybe just getting back into aviation, people that haven't flown for 20 years. So it was all sort of backgrounds, and it made me feel that I was a meaningful part of their journey as much as they were being a meaningful part of my journey. So it was a very win-win situation.
So it was a two-way street?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And did you mentor some other young pilots that are standouts now?
Yeah, I got the opportunity to do that, which, you know, you never think that your story is going to inspire or be meaningful to someone else. But once you start talking about it and the hardships that you have encountered along the way, you're more relatable to people. So unfortunately, right now, due to my schedule, it's kind of hard for me to do part-time just because I won't be able to really focus and give all my attention to a student. It will take me a long time to get them through any rating or something, but it's my goal to eventually continue in aviation. That's why I just renew my CFI through AOPA with the FERC, and I, you know, hope to keep it valid and keep it current, just because I feel that as instructors, as pilots, being a flight instructor keeps us sharp, and it's a great way, as I say, to give back to the aviation.
You mentioned giving back a couple of times. How important is giving back?
It's very important. It's key because that's what really it's keeping you, like, it keeps you humble and it makes you appreciate everything that you have accomplished a lot more, because sometimes you can lose sight of your accomplishments and how important it is to get other people to achieve their dreams and get to probably where you are or even further.
So you are here with 15 to 20 other amazing Latina women right now. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel really humbled, just because I feel that a lot of them paved the way and broke the glass ceiling for me to get here today and made sure that we got a shot to be represented and highlighted in so many aspects of the aviation community. So it's a really humbling experience, and I'm so grateful for it.
I'm curious as to, yet again, how can we get other young people involved in aviation? This is a common stumbling block, and not just in aviation, but in some other fields too. How can we get more young people involved?
I think right now through social media is a great platform to outreach and to be relatable. So just to show other people that you don't only have to be a pilot to be part of aviation, but there are so many other options, and that's what the book is really about. Like, just to show that if you don't want to be a pilot because you're afraid of heights, or maybe you have some medical restriction that doesn't allow you to be a pilot, that is not a deterrent for you to not pursue a position in aviation. So I think that by outreaching social media, social events, and events like what we're having today, really, really inspire people to get involved in aviation, and also sharing your story, not being selfish with what you have accomplished and all the hardships and good things and people along the way. Networking is key, just to everybody to get in aviation, even as a hobby as well.
What's in the future for you right now?
Well, in the future is hopefully fly the bigger plane I can and the faster plane I can. So that's, I guess, the goal that a lot of pilots have. So just fly whatever is bigger, whatever is faster. Right now, I'm really happy learning a lot. I'm a very young first officer, so I have a lot to learn. And I've been, you know, meeting a lot of great captains that have helped me to improve my skills. And you know, corporate aviation is a lot different to flight instructing. So I think corporate is going to be in my near future. And who knows, maybe the airlines later on. Thank you guys for being here and to just always providing, you know, really good resources to pilots, because I have used the resources that IOPA provides, and, you know, as a flight instructor, as a aviation nerd, I just love everything that IOPA has provided. So I appreciate you guys for being here.
Thank you for sticking around for us
today.
No.
Quick, thank you.
What is the main message you tell young people?
The main message, just to do whatever lights a fire inside their heart. Just do whatever makes you happy. Do whatever, you know, sometimes we're very quick at jumping at but what if, or to jump to the buts, but never to try to thinking what can be possible to overcome those buts. So just go for it. Just if you want to go for something, just do it, because if there is a will, there is a way.
David, thanks for talking to Jessica. So if you're interested in, if you're a Latina who's a pilot, interested in meeting more, getting together, or just want to help support that community, they are having a second event this October, I believe, at College Park Airport, same place. So put it on your calendar.
I'll put it on mine for sure, because it was a real pleasure to meet the Latina aviators. And I'm so glad that Jacqueline Ruiz brought them together. And I'll definitely be making plans for October.
Cool. All right. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm Ian Twombly. Our editor is Austin Hansen.
And I'm David Tulis. Don't forget, you can find us at aopa.org/hangartalk and wherever you get your podcasts.
See you next time.
See you next time, Ian.
Hangar Talk from AOPA, your freedom to fly.